There is no significant date in musical history to play this particular song by the Beatles. I apologize for that. I like to start the show on a lighter note before we get into the heavy stuff, the stuff that sometimes gets our dander up, maybe raises our blood pressure, makes us a little bit angry. And heck, I should be in the perfect mood to do that. The Leafs won last night. My football team won last night. We had a great night at the Delta in Waterloo in support of physician recruitment with the Greater KW Chamber of Commerce. Colin Robertson, our guy on the other side of the glass, brought candy. I've got three mini chocolate bars sitting beside me. But I have to get right to this. And I'm going to be as measured as I can be, because I am truly upset by this. I'm very upset by this. Taxman by the Beatles, the song that starts our show today. Because recently, I had a conversation with one of our local mayors, and this mayor was a little bit upset with me for rounding up the tax increase that the mayor's municipality had imposed upon us last year. And in fairness, the mayor was right. It was a blank 0.1% increase, and I rounded it up to the next number. I know you don't do that until it's 0.5 or higher. I shouldn't have. However, in the conversation, the mayor said to me, our tax increase was actually only dot, dot, dot. And I said, well, hang on a second. Your very own website at the city says your tax increase was dot, 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 which is higher than the number that you're telling me right now. And so it stuck in my mind, because if the mayor is out there touting one number for a tax increase, but the city's website says something different, clearly there are different stories being told to people in the community. And so I take you to last evening when I, like you may have, received the email update from the city of Cambridge talking about budget deliberations and the strong mayor's powers that were invoked by Cambridge Mayor Jan Liggett to bring in a tax increase at 1.26%. That is wonderful. Who wouldn't be happy with a 1.26% tax increase? But if it sounds too good to be true, and I thought 1.26, how in H-E double hockey sticks in this climate did you get to 1.26? And here's the rub. What the city went and did is change the way it's going to collect stormwater rates from you, which I suppose is fine. However, if you look at the city's own budget documents, all you have to do, I mean, and it puts the effort on you, good citizen of Cambridge, which I think is the point of the city telling you by way of news release that the tax increase is 1.26%. The city's own budget documents, which I have looked at with my own eyes and shared for you on Twitter at Farwell_WR, tell you that the actual tax increase is 3.68% plus the 1% infrastructure levy. Last time I checked, you have to pay it. So the actual tax increase is 4.68% right from the city's own budget document. So why is the city putting out a news release to tell you, the good citizen of Cambridge, that the tax increase is 1.26%, when in actuality, from the city's own budget documents, it tells you that the increase is 4.68%. I am trying to be as measured as I can be. So I will simply say that I feel personally that this is misleading. Is it deliberately misleading? I'll leave that for you to decide and for the city to answer. But it's misleading, Cambridge. And to that other mayor I was talking about who thought that the tax increase, or wanted to tell me the tax increase, was lower than what the website actually says, shame on you. Shame on all of you. We need some sort of uniformity. I'm thinking it's got to be a provincial legislation so that every municipality reports the same way. I'm not going to claim to be an expert, okay? But basic accounting contains things called GAPs, generally accepted accounting principles. All municipalities should follow the same ones and report to their taxpayers the same way so that we know if one city says our tax increase, property tax increase is X, and another municipality says our property tax increase is Y, we know that we are comparing apples to apples. You can't have different reporting methods from different municipalities within one region, let alone across the province. Come on. How can there not be uniformity on this? And how do you have the stones to tell people that their tax increase is 1.26% when your own budget documents say otherwise? Shame on you. Shame on all of you.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
all right, let's get to your Farwell Show 5 for this Tuesday morning. The Winnipeg Jets have lost their first game of this NHL season after an 8-0 start. And what team beat them? The Toronto Maple Leafs, led by former captain John Tavares.
In over the line, grabbed off by Tanev, who circles the goal, trying to get it out, and he got it ahead, and the Leafs with an empty net, backhanded, scores! John Tavares with a backhand to the empty net, and the Maple Leafs are going to win this one, and John Tavares scores the hat trick.
More hockey tonight, this time, though, in Kitchener. The Rangers are home to the Sarnia Sting, pregame at 6:30, right here on 570 News Radio. Number two, health workers opposed to the closure of safe injection sites in Ontario will hold a news conference this morning at Queen's Park. More than 600 health workers have signed a letter addressed to Premier Doug Ford and Health Minister Sylvia Jones, saying the closure of the sites will have devastating consequences. Number three on your Farwell Show 5 this morning. A second Ontario municipality has formally decided it's willing to become the site of a deep geological repository for Canada's nuclear waste. The municipality of South Bruce, located just south of Owen Sound, held a referendum putting the question to its residents, and the results showed 51% in favor of the project. Number four, we will find out today if the Bloc Québécois will make good on its threat to talk to other parties about toppling the federal Liberal government. Today was the deadline for the Trudeau government to pass a private member's bill to increase seniors' benefits. The Bloc said the motion had to pass if the Liberals wanted to avoid an election before Christmas. And number five on your Farwell Show 5 this morning, the Los Angeles Dodgers are one win away from sweeping the New York Yankees out of the World Series. The Dodgers beat the Yankees last night 4-2 to take a 3-0 series lead. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I honestly don't know which way the regional government is reporting its proposed tax increase, but as you know, they're working towards an 8% number. However, no matter how they are reporting their tax increases, and if it's different from Cambridge, who knows, I do think that the speed camera program and all of this nonsense about enforcing school zone speeds 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year is a cash grab. No other way to describe it. Turns out I'm not the only one who feels that way. One of our municipalities in the region is pushing back. You'll find out which one. Coming up on the Mike Farwell Show, this is 570 News Radio.
This is where today's topics turn into today's talking points. It's local and it's democratic radio at its finest. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio.
When I look at all this information, the issue is not in school zones, it's not in community safety zones, it's in intersections of busy roads. And so I think we need to fix that problem first before we start fixing problems that I don't believe are really there at this point in time. So if we're really, really concerned about pedestrian safety, and I know we are, and I know the city is, and I believe the region as well, we got a litany of issues that probably should take precedent before school zones become a potential cash grab for the region.
The Mike Farwell Show continues
on 570 News Radio.
So you mean we'll use actual data? That's City of Kitchener Ward 3 Councillor Jason Deneau, who looked up some data, found out that most collisions in this region are happening at intersections. Three of the top 10 intersections in the City of Kitchener that Councillor Deneau identified. But he said these collisions are not happening in school zones. If we want to increase safety, let's go to the places where safety is currently a concern based on, data. All of that part of a conversation that was started by a motion tabled at Kitchener Council last night by Councillor Bill Ioannidis. He represents Ward 7 in Kitchener, and he's with us on the show this morning. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay on this nice rainy morning.
It is a rainy morning. But, you know, apparently speed cameras would still work in weather like this. However, your motion last night seems to be an effort to withdraw the city of Kitchener from the region's speed camera rollout. Can you explain the idea behind the motion?
Okay. Well, obviously, you know, a lot of members of council have experienced some frustration with the SE program, you know, throughout the city. And, you know, at the regional level where it's being proposed and running the program, we just didn't see the eye to eye with some of the key issues that, you know, we were raising, and we were very frustrated with the fact that it didn't seem like our points were getting across to the region. And so that was the major reason why myself and had other members, you know, chip in putting the motion forward.
And this motion asks that, or says that the city of Kitchener will, quote, pause future installation of additional ASEs, automated speed enforcement cameras, on roads under the jurisdiction of the city of Kitchener, beyond any locations already approved. So if it's a school on a regional road, that's one thing. But if it's a school on a road under the jurisdiction of the city of Kitchener, it will not have a speed camera based on this motion.
That's correct. And, you know, part of the motion, too, it's not to give up on the program. We're all committed to wanting to have some form of, you know, enforcement, but just to have it, you know, a little more balanced and a little bit more tailored to Kitchener needs.
And to tailor it to Kitchener needs, Bill, as I look at the motion, it talks about revenue sharing and the ability for the city of Kitchener and its council to amend the operating times. So if I'm reading between the lines there, I get the sense that you don't agree that the cameras should operate 24/7, 365.
You would guess right. Yes. You know, during the election time, I don't know, Mike, if you're aware, I have two cameras really close by where I live and in the ward I represent. And so I really heard it really loud and clear from the area that they didn't find the system very useful. They found it very punitive. And, you know, with a few tweaks, like what I heard from the residents is that they were willing to, you know, accept, you know, even paying fines, but just the off hours. Like we've had one resident get a speeding ticket at Christmas Day, and yeah, it just didn't resonate with the community. They just didn't have that buy-in. So yeah, that's one of the rationale for why we're frustrated.
With the way that the region is currently proposing this, Bill, does it feel like a cash grab to you?
Well, in our meeting the other day, yesterday, if I was to compare from what we were told during our meeting with the region, at the end of the day, when everything's fully rolled out, a $21 million surplus, and, you know, if I do the math, Kitchener represents roughly about 40% of the region. You know, you're looking at $8+ million, and if I was to compare that to our tax levy, that's a 5% tax increase. That equivalent, and I don't think I can justify that to our residents in saying that's in the name of safety.
So the motion passes at Kitchener Council last night. Where do we go from here? Will the region be unable, based on this motion, to put ASEs on streets that are under the jurisdiction of the municipality of Kitchener?
That's correct. So what's happening is everything's on pause. We paused the entire program. We are going to, once this gets ratified at council in either next week or the following week, everything will be on pause, and we will continue to keep negotiating with the region, but we really didn't have an agreement with them. Like revenue sharing, again, was something that you know, we had concerns about, like, is the city of Kitchener only going to get 10% of the revenues? And again, that's not my main frustration. My main frustration in reality is, if it's for safety, it should just be something that's revenue neutral and not gouging residents in general. As you heard, as yourself, you're earlier on, you're talking about tax increases. I'm hearing that too, and everyone's feeling that pinch and feeling very frustrated about the affordability of everything. And so you have to be very cognizant of that. So yeah, we're pausing the program, and we're actually going to look, myself and Councillor Schneider, we talked to a contractor that provides ASEs, and you know, we're looking at other third parties as well to provide that service.
Bill, I appreciate your work on this and your time on the show this morning. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bill Ioannidis is the Ward 7 councillor in the city of Kitchener. His motion brought forward last night, adopted by council, will press pause on the region's speed camera rollout. I don't want to say I told you so, but I told you there ain't no way in HE double hockey sticks we're going to have 175 speed cameras on the roads of this region. And Kitchener is the first municipality to push back. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. For more than a decade, a Guelph woman has been repairing bicycles and then selling them to provide money for charity. For more than a decade. But she's not able to do it right now because somebody in the Royal City complained. And now she's been shut down. We'll tell you her story coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. For 14 years now, our next guest has been repairing bicycles in her garage, then selling them so that she can raise money for charity. But some way, somehow, somebody decided that this should not continue. They lodged a complaint, and now the city of Guelph has at least temporarily shut down the operation. Mary Reif is the bike repair person in question and joins our show this morning. Mary, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you take us back into the history of this 14 or so years ago? How did it all get started for you?
Way back when. My mother had dementia and my father couldn't handle it, so they moved into my place. My father is very, very handy. He was bored to tears because it was nothing for him to do. And I said, Dad, just put a sign out at the road saying you'll fix bikes, because he loves fixing things. That started it. People would bring their bikes. And then one day somebody brought him a bike and said, well, you can fix it, but I don't want it back. And my dad said, well, what am I going to do with it? And I said, just sell it, Dad. He goes, well, I don't need the money. And I said, give it to charity. Bingo. That's where it started.
Isn't it funny how simple it seemed all those years ago, and here we are 14 years later.
Oh, 14 years later, and what it has grown into is just immense, yes.
Well, so how has it grown? What does it look like today?
Well, when my father passed 6 years ago, my sister and I added up. He kept a little notebook of all the sales that he'd made, and as a 91-year-old, he had raised $18,000. As a 91-year-old.
That's amazing.
We couldn't believe it. We're just shaking our heads going like, what? But that's more people came, and he was such a personable person that, you know, that people would drop off their bikes. Oh, these are too small. My kids have moved out, whatever. And he just kept doing it. And then after he passed, I thought, what am I going to do with all these bikes? Well, the last few years of his life, he grew very weak, and I was doing most of the work anyway, so I just carried on.
Do you have any idea, Mary, over all of these years, including the $18,000 that your 91-year-old father was able to raise, how much you have raised for charity over these 14 years?
I have no idea. The last 4 years, we've raised over $100,000.
And to which charities does the money go?
My father used to split it. I am very particular. I like to give it to the Stephen Lewis Foundation, which is a Canadian charity. It's a grassroots charity that provides for people in Africa with HIV/AIDS. I've been to Africa myself and seen firsthand the devastation. And I came back a very changed person and wondered what I could do. Well, this is what I can do.
Well, or perhaps what you could do, because very recently, what has happened to cause you to reevaluate what you're doing?
If somebody put in a complaint, because technically I am violating 3 of Guelph bylaws. If somebody complains, then a bylaw officer comes out and assesses the situation and says, well, you actually are violating 3 bylaws, so I'm going to send you a nasty letter. It's just a form letter, so don't take it too personally. He was a very nice guy. And he said, you will have to shut down by the 19th of October, which I have done.
And which bylaws were you in contravention of?
Well, bylaw number 1 says you can't have a home occupation in your garage. You can have a home occupation in your home. You can be a hairdresser or a music teacher or run your business out of your home, in your home, but you can't do it out of your garage, which is kind of silly. But anyway, that is one of the bylaws. The second bylaw was you cannot have a display on your lawn. And in the summer, I put the bikes out where people can see them and take them for rides and stuff like that. So they're out on the lawn. So I do have a display on my lawn, but I look around the city right now and there's displays on everybody's lawn for Halloween, for Christmas, whatever. And my third one that I was breaking was I was actually putting a little sign out that said bikes for sale.
Oh, you can't advertise your business on your front lawn something? Yeah,
you can't. I was in contravention of some sign law.
Those bikes that you would put out on the lawn in the summertime so people could see them, recognize they're for sale, take little test rides, whatever. Did those bicycles stay on the lawn around the clock?
Oh, heavens no. If I left them out at night, they'd all be gone in the morning. I'm a senior, so I only do this part-time. So I'd open for a couple hours in the afternoon and in the morning I like to do other things. But in the afternoon, I would sit in my garage and just relax and fix bikes, So they're only, and the bikes went in and out every day. None were ever left out, ever.
And there's no discretion on the part of the city and its bylaws here, Mary, when it comes to running a business, which technically, I mean, I guess by the letter of the law, it could be argued you are, but you're not profiting from this personally. You're funneling money into the Stephen Lewis Foundation.
Yeah, I take no money at all. Absolutely, 100% goes to the Stephen Lewis Foundation. So, I mean, I just do it as a hobby. As a senior, it keeps my mind active, solving bike problems, because every bike that comes in is quite different and what needs to be done. It's very social for me. I meet a lot of interesting people. So it's not a business. It's just fun.
So I know that you have taken your case to City Hall. What efforts have you made to appeal your case here?
The bylaw person that came out had no issue with me. He said there's no safety issue, there's no noise issue, there's no traffic issue. What you're doing is a good thing. Why don't you go for a variance? And a variance just means that the bylaw is there, but you have permission to break it. So I am applying for a variance. Just to apply, it costs $1,900 just to put the application in. Doesn't guarantee whether you'll get it or not. In this case, I'm pretty sure I get it because even some of the city officials think that the complaint is kind of silly.
When do you have your hearing?
I'm not sure. I believe it's on the 14th of November.
Okay, so relatively soon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you're successful, that could mean about a 1 month shutdown from the time you had to pull the bikes in to when you might be able to return to business. Sorry, not business, to charity, to fundraising. I don't want the city of Guelph to get mad at me now too, Mary.
technically, I would close down the beginning of November anyway because
sure.
My garage is not heated and I have arthritis in my hands. I am not going out in the garage and fixing bikes with cold tools in my hands.
So don't blame you.
I usually shut down from November till March and then start up again in April.
What would you say to the person who lodged the complaint and caused this disruption to your charitable efforts?
Probably they didn't know what I was doing. I did have a complaint 2 years ago, and I wrote a nice letter to the city explaining what I was doing. They presented it to the complainant, and the complaint was withdrawn. So I've kind of been through this before, but not to this extent. The complaint has not been withdrawn.
Mary, I wish you the best of luck with that committee of adjustment and getting that variance. Obviously, to my ears, you certainly deserve it. And I love what you've been doing, so I hope you get to keep it up.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for your support.
Well, thank you very much for making time for the show, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mary Reif, she is a bicycle repair person in Guelph. Following in the footsteps of her late father, continuing the work that he began, bring your bicycle that you may not want anymore. Mary will repair it, and then she'll sell it and donate the money to charity. More than $100,000 raised in just the past 4 years. That's not bad. But somebody complained. Bylaw has paid the visit, and at least for the time being, Mary has been shut down. I'm glad there's recourse here, and that the city encouraged Mary to take advantage of this recourse, applying for that variance. Should it come out of her pocket? No. Should the city have some discretion on this? Yes. Of all the things, I mean, how long have I been heeing and hawing on this show over the last number of weeks about parking in school zones? And I'm yet to see, I mean, I'm not there every day, so maybe bylaw has come by my particular neighborhood. But of all the things for bylaw to crack down on, of all the complaints we lodge and the action we would like to see taken, this is what Guelph bylaw decides needs to be remedied. I'm just over here SMHing, shaking my head, S-ing-M-H. I don't know how you feel about the story, but I'd love to hear from you. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio.
Yeah, I take no money at all. Absolutely, 100% goes to the Stephen Lewis Foundation. I mean, I just do it as a hobby. As a senior, it keeps my mind active, solving bike problems, because every bike that comes in is quite different and what needs to be done. It's very social for me. I meet a lot of interesting people. It's not a business. It's just fun.
Mary Reif repairs bicycles in the garage of her Guelph home. She's been doing it for the past 14 years, estimates that in the last 4 years alone, she's raised more than $100,000 for charity. And after 14 years of doing this, including the times during which her late father started the program, there has never been a problem until recently, when one complaint fell on receptive ears. Bylaw came by and told Mary she was in contravention of three of the city of Guelph's bylaws, and she had to shut down her operation. Now, she has, at the encouragement of the city, applied for a variance. It's $1,900 out of her own pocket, though, which I don't think is right. Frankly, I don't think it's right that the city of Guelph and its bylaw department decided to lay down the law on this particular woman. I get that the letter of the law says what she's doing contravenes bylaws. But surely there is some discretion in this when you realize that she's not doing it for personal gain or profit. She's doing it for charity. We can find a way in our hearts to understand and maybe just maybe look the other way, can't we? That's what I would like to see in this particular case. But maybe you're more of a stickler than even I am. Usually I'm the stickler. In this case, I wonder why we don't have room for a little discretion in the application of the bylaw. 519-570-2545, star 570, 1-800-570-5715. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. It's been a while.
It has been. How you keeping?
I've been good. How about you?
I'm also good. Thank you very much.
Good. two things. I think you're being a little harsh on the bylaw people of Guelph. I mean, they're just, A, they're doing their job. A complaint was filed. And as I've been told from bylaw people, once somebody makes a complaint, they have to follow up on it. But that being said, this is another example of just, why don't people just talk to their neighbors? This could have been avoided. You know, just go out and ask what they're doing, why they're doing it, and maybe this could have all been avoided. But people are just so hung up and afraid to talk to their neighbors now that everybody's afraid to, you know, to talk to their neighbors. So I think it could have been avoided. Hopefully it could have been avoided if you just go out and talk to your neighbors and understand why they're doing what they're doing.
That's a great point, Tony. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Enjoy the day. And Tony's right. I'm not trying to be hard on the bylaw officer. Even Mary said he was quite pleasant, quite polite. I'm wondering if there's not room within the department for some discretion is all. But I get it. Like, you can still investigate the complaint, too. Then you can get there and say, yeah, you know what? Just keep raising money for charity, young lady. I'm not gonna give you a hard time over this. That's what I'm saying. But Tony makes a good point. I'm not trying to be hard on bylaw officers generally, or specifically in this case, as Mary pointed out, they were quite kind when they came by. I just wish there was room for some discretion when the bylaw officer shows up and finds that the complaint is essentially unfounded. Let's just say, I investigated. Have a nice day. Paul, what do you make of this?
Hey, good morning, everybody. I drive by that house once a week. I'm a soccer guy. My kids are growing up, and we see tons and tons of bikes. And to be honest, I always look at it with a little bit of a skeptical eye. I'm like, oh, who is this bicycle hooligan? And how many bikes do they have, and where do they get them from? But now that I'm learning that it's all for charity and it's all a good cause, you know, I'm really happy, and I hope that it keeps going, and I hope that it we easily raise the money needed, and that none of that comes out of the charity pot, and that the good folks of Guelph, of which there are many, will come through in the end. I am glad that there's a little bit of due process, because I wouldn't want it to be a bicycle hooligan with like 50 bikes, and I don't know where the money's going. But now that it's out in the open, you know, we've got a great show like yours telling us what's what. You know, everyone can get on with their day, and bicycles can be used for good.
Yeah, you know what, Paul, great point, and thanks for the kind words. It kind of ties into what Tony was saying, right? If you actually have the conversation with your neighbor, or even if you're just driving by like Paul does and you want to know what's going on at this house, start there before you call bylaw on that individual. A conversation between two human beings in the wonderful city of Guelph could have eliminated this whole process. And to Paul's point, now that we've got the story out in the open, we can understand better that this is not a bicycle hooligan, in Paul's words. This is somebody that's doing a good deed for charity. This is the Mike Farwell Show. We talk to each other on this show. 570 News Radio. Well, we are off to a rip-roaring start on the show today. Don't forget, and don't be fooled by any media release from the city of Cambridge that says your tax increase for next year will be 1.26%. The actual number is 4.68%. It's right there in the city's budget documents. But for whatever reason, they have decided to promote a 1.26% tax increase. City of Kitchener, like many residents, I think, of this region, feel as though the region's automated speed enforcement program is a cash grab. So the City of Kitchener tabled a motion at its meeting last night, brought forward by Councillor Bill Ioannidis, to withdraw from the program. No photo radar cameras on streets in the City of Kitchener that are under municipal control, not regional control. So the pushback against the speed camera rollout, and an aggressive rollout at that, has begun. And poor Mary Rife, all she wants to do is repair bicycles for charity, but she's been shut down, at least temporarily, because somebody in Guelph, I can't say it was a direct neighbor, but somebody saw what she was doing and raised the issue with bylaw. Hopefully Mary is back up and running in no time. I've got to get you to the 570 News Center for an update, and then let's talk about corporate welfare. Why do we provide multi-billion dollar subsidies to multi-billion dollar companies? And what could we do with the money instead? We'll find out next on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. Government subsidies, also known as corporate welfare. If we consider, for example, the subsidies here in Ontario that have been provided companies in the electric vehicle industry, the total amount of subsidies, government money invested, if you will, and I'll use the term loosely, but nonetheless, the total amount of money invested by governments versus the amount of return they expect to see by way of jobs and economic stimulation is actually a net loss of between $4 and $5 billion. Now, some might say that you got to spend money to keep people employed. It's one of the functions that government has. I'm not a huge fan of it. Why provide multi-billion dollar subsidies to multi-billion dollar businesses? But nonetheless, let's take a look at some of the numbers and perhaps ask ourselves, what could that money be used for besides subsidizing big business and or providing corporate welfare? Jay Goldberg is the Ontario Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, joins the show. Jay, good morning.
Good morning.
Do you have any data as to how much money was handed out by way of subsidy or corporate welfare by Canadian politicians of late?
Yeah, so the most recent numbers that were put out by the Fraser Institute come from 2021, which is actually before a lot of these auto deals. And it's showing that the provincial government here in Ontario spent just over $22 billion in 2021 on corporate welfare, with the federal government spending almost $50 billion on corporate welfare. And as I like to point out to folks, in both cases, you could wipe out the deficit. In Ontario's case, you'd have a massive surplus. In Ottawa's case, you'd have a small surplus. But in both cases, you could literally balance budgets at both levels if we simply were not giving billions of dollars to wealthy corporations.
What's the argument for providing these subsidies?
Well, I mean, the argument, particularly for the auto subsidies, has been that, the Biden administration has passed what's called the Inflation Reduction Act. So they're offering subsidies to these EV manufacturers and the battery manufacturers. And so if we don't match that, then they're going to go to the United States. What I argue is that if we have an environment where we're simply not competitive enough to attract investment and we have to spend billions of dollars to get specific companies to come here, then we really need to have a fundamental look at our economic competitiveness, at our situation, at our taxation levels, things like that, to make sure that we can attract businesses to Ontario without giving cherry-picked handouts. And, of course, the problem with corporate welfare is that governments are picking specific, usually very large companies to give billions of dollars to, while at the same time there's no special deal for smaller, medium-sized businesses that perhaps the government hasn't heard of, but might have opened up here in Ontario and Canada if we had a more competitive environment. And so that's when I talk about things like, for example, getting rid of the small business tax, which they've done in Alberta. Ontario has the highest small business tax in Canada, lowering corporate taxes, finding a way to make sure that we're attracting businesses of all shapes and sizes that want to come here for a competitive environment and not just for a one-time handout or multi-year handout that, you know, once it possibly ends, they could just pick up and leave.
So would you argue, Jay, that's a hidden cost of these big billion-dollar handouts because there are these businesses that would otherwise set up if the economic conditions or the climate was better?
Yeah, it's always an opportunity cost, right? What could Ontario be doing with $22 billion? Well, you could absolutely eliminate the small business tax in Ontario for a small fraction of it, for about a 25% of the cost of giving these handouts to the wealthy corporations like Stellantis, like the Ford Motor Company, like Honda. You could just get rid of small business taxes, and that would do a lot to attract small and medium-sized businesses to Ontario. Figuring out how to make our hydro rates more competitive, certainly making corporate taxes more competitive. These are all things that we can do that would benefit all businesses, that would encourage businesses to stay here, and that would attract other businesses from abroad to come here. And so again, when you're cherry picking specific deals, this is just specific instances where governments have identified possible investments by specific large corporations. But not every corporation is known by or approaches the government and says, hey, if you give me this X billion dollars, you know, we'll set up shop in your country. That's not how it works, particularly with the smaller businesses. And so when you see policies of corporate welfare, what you end up seeing is they're all going to very big companies. In most cases, in the auto cases, for example, they're Fortune 500 companies that don't actually need handouts, but they're getting this money because we're fundamentally just not competitive enough to bring them here without these specific handouts.
You've made the argument, Jay, that the money used on these handouts could be used instead to wipe out deficits, balance budgets. That's something that I am very concerned with, but I get the sense sometimes, oftentimes I think, that I'm kind of alone in my desire to see balanced budgets and eliminated deficits. Do Canadians generally care about such things?
Well, I think when you frame it in the right way, I think Canadians do. You know, if we talk, for example, about the fact that we're spending $1 billion a month on debt interest here in Ontario, I think that resonates. That's $1 billion that, for example, you could be building 12 brand new state-of-the-art hospitals in the province of Ontario if we didn't have to pay our debt interest bill. And this is what happens. Folks may not, you know, the idea of debt might go over their heads, government debt. But when you talk about the money we're spending on interest payments, which is $14 billion this year provincially, I think that really hits home for people when you start to talk about the fact that you could have 12 brand new state-of-the-art hospitals instead. When you look at the federal level and you see that we're spending over $50 billion on debt interest, which is actually we're spending more on debt interest at the federal level than they're spending on health care, and then they're bringing in through the federal sales tax. So if we didn't have to pay those debt interest bills federally, you could completely eliminate the GST. So I think when you frame it like that, when you have a conversation about, well, look at what we could be doing with this money instead, I think then it really resonates with people that government debt is a problem, growing debt is a problem, and long-term deficits are a problem. And so rather than just being an abstract number, when you start to have a conversation, and I was on a debt clock tour just a few months ago talking with folks about this. When you start to frame it as a choice between hospitals and sending money to bondholders on Bay Street, that really starts to resonate with people. And I think that our politicians really need to start talking in those terms.
Jay, I always appreciate the perspective on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Jay Goldberg is the Ontario director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. He says corporate welfare is fueling government debt. And in fact, we could wipe out those debts and balance those budgets if only we would change our approach to taxpayer-funded handouts for big business. Between 2011 and 2021, Jay argues, the Ontario government spent $100 billion on corporate welfare. Yet, inflation-adjusted economic growth in the province during that same 10-year period was below 1%. If handing out billions to create jobs and grow the economy worked, surely, Jay argues, we would have evidence by now. I think we understand the arguments for and against, right? The arguments in support of corporate welfare or subsidies to big business are that we need to generate economic investment in this province, in this country, in order that people have good paying jobs now and for generations to come, lest we lose it to our neighbor to the south, who, by the way, has a 10 times larger population. But, you know, we'll just leave that there. Trying to keep up with the Joneses when, in this case, the Joneses are the Americans is not an easy task. Some might say it's a losing proposition, but we spend this money in an effort to create and or protect jobs for Ontarians, for Canadians. At the same time, you look at all the money that's being spent and being handed out to these billion-dollar companies, and you ask, well, couldn't we do something different and or better with those billions of dollars right here at home? How do you feel about subsidies, corporate welfare, handouts to big businesses that are already making billions of dollars. Good idea? Bad idea? Is this necessary? You tell me. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
The provincial government here in Ontario has spent just over $22 billion in 2021 on corporate welfare, with the federal government spending almost $50 billion on corporate welfare. But in both cases, you could literally balance budgets at both levels if we simply were not giving billions of dollars to wealthy corporations.
Jay Goldberg is the Ontario Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, joins us this morning to talk about corporate welfare, government handouts, subsidies provided to big business out of the public coffers, money that is collected from us as taxpayers. Generally speaking, I am opposed to this kind of work for a number of reasons. I really do believe there are far better things we could be spending our money on. And really, one of my other problems with it is it sets the government up in the position of being the one who's picking the winners and the losers, right? They're going to invest all of this in this particular industry, but what if it doesn't pan out? We're the ones that are taking the risk for that, and perhaps we didn't ask to take the risk for that. 519-570-2545. 45 star 570 and 1-800-570-5715. As Jay Goldberg points out in his argument against corporate welfare, in the province of Ontario alone over the past decade, we have racked up a whopping $145 billion in debt. That includes more than $80 billion just under Doug Ford's watch alone. And that further means we're spending almost $14 billion on debt interest payments. Meantime, the deficit is $9.8 billion. So just think about it. We're spending $14 billion just on debt interest, and the deficit is just under $10 billion. I know the numbers make you kind of dizzy, but if the handouts from just this year alone in the province were even half of what they were a couple of years ago, the deficit could be wiped out and a surplus could be provided simply by eliminating corporate welfare. The same holds true, Jay argues, at the federal level. $47 billion on corporate welfare in 2021 by the federal Liberals, and the budget could be balanced in one fell swoop if that $47 billion was back in the government's coffers. And by the way, I had wondered if, because sometimes I feel like a bit of a lone wolf when it comes to, please, can we balance budgets? Please, can we try to eliminate deficits? Like, instead of just spending and then spending and then spending some more, could we even consider some sort of fiscal guardrail here? Don't do it for me. Do it for my kids and their kids, right? And their kids' kids. How about that as an idea? And according to Leger Research, recent poll indicates 81% of people in Ontario are concerned about the debt dive the province has taken over the past decade. So maybe I'm not as lonely out here in the woods as I thought I was. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, an update on a story I told you last week about the crazy Christmas decoration guy whose house is not far from the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium. He's become the crazy Halloween decoration guy, and somebody had stolen something from his display. And then there was a good news end to the story. Well, there's a new chapter, and it's a dark twist. I'll tell you the story coming up. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Last week on the show, I told you the story about the crazy Christmas decorations guy. Many of you know the house on the corner of East Avenue and Pandora in Kitchener, not far from the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium. He goes all out at Christmas time. And in recent years, he has also started going all out at Halloween. Sadly, he was losing hundreds of dollars of stuff from his display because it was being stolen. Night after night, it was being stolen. I told you about this on the show last week, and you responded in the way that only you would. And not only did some of the stuff get returned or new items were brought to him to help fill out the display. So he wasn't out the money. We all kind of came together to help out crazy Christmas slash crazy Halloween decorations guy to make up for what he had lost. It felt like just the perfect ending to the story. Ah, but there's a twist. The case of the stolen Halloween decorations continues. I feel like I'm in a Hardy Boys book. I'll take this directly from Crazy Halloween Decorations Guy post on his neighborhood Facebook page. Me again, guy on the corner of East Avenue and Pandora with the stolen Halloween decorations. Well, he did it again last night. I now have a camera system and I placed an air tag in an exceptionally nice gravestone. And sure enough, at 1:15 a.m. last night, the camera records him. He stole the gravestone and also realized he was on camera and unplugged and took the wireless remote that turns on some of the lights. He thought that would somehow disable the camera, but it does not. The AirTag has been tracked to a house a block away. The occupants claim they don't know a thing, but my AirTag is pinging there and the police won't do anything about it. They can't force themselves inside so I can ping the AirTag with the sound on. If you recognize the guy in the video, please DM me. So let's get this straight. You go to all of this time, all of this effort, all of this money, and all of this technology just to bring joy to people in your neighborhood, and somebody a block away, like this is the part, one block away, I'm leaving the name of the street out of this so we don't head over there with torches and pitchforks. But my goodness, one block away and the AirTag is pinging and crazy Halloween decoration guy can't do a ding-dang thing about it because police can't force themselves inside so the AirTag can ping aloud. I don't know what to say, but if I'm crazy Halloween decorations guy, I'm not so sure I have enthusiasm for the holiday anymore. A disappointing twist in the ongoing saga of the stolen Halloween decorations in Kitchener. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. This one is an absolute thrill for me. Not only is my next guest a good friend, I want to be careful about saying old friend. We've known each other for a long time, but I'm the old one in this friendly relationship. But I can't believe we are marking 20 years of Dana Short Gourmet in Waterloo. Blows my mind. Dana Short, the one and only, in studio with me this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for that warm welcome. I know, 20 years. It's hard for me to believe.
I can't even imagine. And thank you for bringing candy cane shortbread cookies with you this morning.
I'm gonna bring a treat.
Love a cookie. I certainly do. Never met one I didn't like. And if it's candy cane shortbread cookies, Dana, it must be that time of year.
Oh, it is. We are full on Christmas. The day after Thanksgiving, we start putting it out. It is completely full Christmas products, decor. We have you covered. If you need, you know, shortbread or a gift basket, prepared meals, we are there to serve you.
I love it. Okay. I want to talk about the milestone that you have reached with 20 years and what's planned around the 20th anniversary. But before we get there, let's just strip it right down, Dana. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the very beginning of this and how it all started for you. Because I'm not sure you necessarily intended for this to be your journey.
Yeah, so I went to University of Guelph for hotel and food administration. Most of my colleagues in that program went on to work in hotels, but I knew that wasn't quite what I wanted to do. Long story short, went to George Brown to chef school, and my intention was to be a private chef. So to work for one or two families, I ended up, people asking me to go to their home, busy professionals, to do what I called a 10 entree service. So it was a personal chef. So I would go into people's homes and cook all day and then leave them with meals in their fridge and freezer for 2 weeks. That led to customers asking me if I would cater. Cater their husband's 40th, cater a bridal shower. I really didn't intend on catering, but having no money and living with my parents, I said, yes, I could do that. Cooking classes, sure. Picnics, sure. Catering. So that led to me then saying, you know what, I need to open a store. Because at that point, when you're working for someone in their home, you're allowed to do that. You don't need to have a public kitchen to rent. But when you're catering, you have to be in a government-inspected facility. So that led to then me renting, oh my gosh, Bright Up Kitchen on Margaret Ave, up and down the stairs and elevator with KitchenAid equipment and groceries. I mean, oh my gosh. And then I ended up leasing the space on Herb Street and realizing I should have a little storefront. So when people were asking me to cater, they also then said, you know what, I don't need it fully catered this time. Can you just make me a great soup and a great dessert for this party? And that led to, well, I really should have a storefront where we can, people can pick these things up as well, which then led to the bigger store. And we don't cater anymore, actually. It's been 15 years since we've catered, but we actually still win in the Reader's Choice and the Record. We still win the catering award, I think, because people are coming in, picking up hors d'oeuvres, picking up entrees. And in their mind, if they're not making any of the food for a celebration, it's kind of in their mind catered. But we can refer. If people need bartenders and servers, we have a list of people on our website that we refer in the area who they need that kind of, you know, that high-level catering. But if people are having, you know, a party and they want some help, we've got all kinds of, we've got over 300 SKUs of products that, of food products that we make, so.
One of the things, one of the reasons I believe, Dana, that people still look at you as perhaps a caterer, you win that award with the Reader's Choice and the Waterloo Region Record, but it's because you are meticulous insofar as if it's a recipe that's going in Dana Short Gourmet's store, you have personally had the hand in it to ensure that it passes the quality assurance test.
Yes, that's so true. Everything from the jam on our shelves to other cookies made by their providers or pizzas from outside suppliers. So we have our own kitchen, but we also bring in great quality foods from the same philosophy as us, from scratch, no chemicals, no preservatives. But everything in that store I've tried. Myself, I've tried, and then also as part of my team, I want their opinion as well. So taste is subjective. So, I mean, it may not be, you may not like curry, for instance. You may not want the curried cauliflower soup, but it's been tried. I test it to make sure it be something that I think is delicious. I think there's value there. So I look at everything from the consistency, the color, the taste, of course, but is there a good amount of meat in this product? Are people going to be disappointed? How's the pastry if it's a pot pie? So a lot of things don't make it into the store. Some suppliers, there's certain things that I really enjoy and we bring those products in, and there's certain companies where it's just maybe not a fit. So that is something where people should have, hopefully, I think our customers do have the assurance and they feel good about knowing, okay, if it's in here, Dana and her team have tried it.
You were well enough established by 2020 that you had something, I guess, a very solid foundation. And of course, I bring up 2020 because that was when the entire world changed. How did the pandemic change the way you do things at Dana Short?
Great question. And I remember driving to work every morning. I listened to you and there'd be the case counts.
Sure.
And, oh my gosh. Hard to believe we're coming up 5 years on that. But we were one of those lucky businesses, fortunate. We really took off. People couldn't go to restaurants and they weren't able to make every meal at home, especially if they had young kids, right? Homeschooling and all of those things. We were legally allowed to be open because we are considered essential, but I made the decision with each lockdown to close for my staff. And especially that first lockdown, we all had no idea, right? What was going to happen. And we weren't selling milk and formula and things like that. So I made the decision to close my staff. Otherwise, I feel I would have lost some good people, which I didn't want to do. And we went all online. After a few months, I really did feel like most of us that this was not going to be, remember, it was supposed to be a 2 month type of thing. So we completely redid the website. I had three people doing that. That was a two and a half month project where we took photographs of every dish. They're called beauty shots. So not just how the product looks frozen, but how it looks once it's after it's been in the oven. So we did it. We just did a full, complete site overhaul and we then closed again with each lockdown. But with each lockdown, we changed in the sense that people could come to the door then and just say, oh, I just need a lasagna. We would grab things quickly, and or we'd have these huge orders of $1,000 or $2,000 where we would need a day to put them together. But we just tried to adapt with what our customers wanted. We had older customers that did not want to go online. They weren't comfortable. So we would, of course, allow for phone orders if they would call us, and we'd take their credit card over the phone. And I had an amazing team of people who just worked so hard. And we also changed some of our product lineups. Like I developed a line of gift baskets called Pandemic Pick-Me-Ups. And we sold, and I love that creative work, and we sold so many. So I remember the names like Brighter Days Ahead and Sunnier Days to Come. And because people were, you know, sending something maybe to their mom who's on her own in a small apartment and can't leave the house, or any number of things. A lot of people were, you know, having a lot of mental health issues. So it was also a line of Funfetti products, cake and cookies. And I know it sounds like, well, a little silly maybe, but bright and colorful. And those were just flying off the shelves because people just, you know, maybe having that with a movie night with their family. And just we were all looking for any little thing that could lift our spirits.
I love it. 20 years in, still adapting to what life throws at you. So let's find out how we mark 20 years of Dana Short Gourmet. Dana, the Dana Short, in studio with me this morning. So stay funny. With us on the mic. You are the Dana Short. This is the Mike Farwell Show. The Mike Farwell Show. 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. In studio this morning with Dana Short. I know you know the name because Dana Short Gourmet has been a fixture in this community now for 20 years. How, Dana, after this journey that you've been on that you shared with us this morning, how do you mark 20 years of business?
How are we going to celebrate?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question as well. We are having an all-day anniversary celebration next Thursday, the 7th of November. 10 a.m. to 7, so the full time we're open. We are going to have so many different samples. We're going to bring back our, what we call retired recipes, or our recipes that went on vacation for a little while. So some of our favorites that we just don't have the room for everything. And then we're going to have some great giveaways, prizes, door prizes, a swag bag for every customer. And just, I can't wait to just be on the floor and honestly just thank people. Thank them, because, I mean, that's why I'm here, is the customers who are coming in. And I love, you know, I love my customers, new and old, and just thanking them for their business and loyalty through the pandemic and just through all the years. We've had so many renditions of Dana Short. It was a 480 square feet was the initial store, including kitchen. The storefront was 120 square feet. And it's so funny when I think back. I was the receptionist, right, answering the phone. I was the caterer. I was the cook. I was the sales associate. I was, you know, everything, right? So did it all. And then through the years, people just being really excited by seeing when I bought Blessings. That was a gift and chocolate store in 2008, right next door. And that's when we expanded, started selling those products as well. Did a big rebrand and renovation in 2015. Had a temporary store in the same plaza. Oh my gosh.
I remember that temporary store. Absolutely, I do.
Oh, I think I tried to block it out. Every item had to be taken out of that the store for this renovation, brought down to the temporary store. That was, I remember, Labor Day, because it was just on our Instagram, showing my little kids at the time. And we were back by Thanksgiving. And all of the general, like all of the contractors said, this is unheard of. Like we begged them to like go as fast as they could. We served them anything they want. Eggs Benedict for breakfast. I mean, I remember it was like, I think we did rack of lamb one day for lunch. Like anything, I said to the kitchen team, anything they want, like they'd have turns taking orders, and then they'd be researching. Like one of my cooks said, I don't know how to make Eggs Benedict. I'm like, that's what YouTube is for, right? But yeah, so just all of these different stages of growth, and it's just so cool. I don't really look back a lot, to be honest. I'm more one to look forward. But with something like the 20 years, and then with these Instagram posts that my team is working on, and stories and photos, it does make you kind of pause and think, you know what, it has really been a journey, and there's been so many people that I need to thank for their support. It can't do that alone, right? And all my amazing employees, that I've had over the years.
It's a remarkable journey. So next Thursday, it's an all-day celebration.
Yes.
20 years of Dana Short Gourmet. That's on Herb. It's Pepler that comes down there, right?
Yes,
it is. Yeah, the corner. So kind of that, it's not really an intersection, but everybody knows where you are in the plaza on Herb Street.
It'll
right
be all
by
weekend
William.
Too, Mike, I should mention. We're going
right
to have
yep.
a Thursday,
okay.
But we're going to have samples all throughout the weekend. We've got so many things planned, and we'll have some giveaways. And so if people can't make it on the Thursday, please come see us on the Wednesday, on the Friday, on the Saturday. We're going to do more than just the one day, but that's the main day.
I love the story of the female-led entrepreneur success that you are. Would you offer any advice to other entrepreneurs, male or female?
I've got a lot of things I think over the years. I've been asked this before. So one thing in terms of, it could be, you know what, it could definitely be man or woman, but in terms of people talking about, you know, balance, harmony, like that whole kind of work-life balance, I like to think of it more as harmony, because sometimes your business is going to get more of your attention, or your career, sometimes your family will, right? It depends. So I think it should be measured over a month or a year or even a lifetime in some cases, as opposed to, you know, not every day, I don't balance every day in terms of, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's going to be my child's not well, or I'm leaving early to go to one of their sporting events, or whatever it may be, where that's going to get more of my attention, whereas other days leading up to the anniversary or Christmas period, it's a very, very busy time of year. So that would be one thing. In our logo, there's a bay leaf. And the reason for that is the bay leaf is the Loris Nobilis, and it's kind of the meaning of never rest on your laurels. So that's something we want to incorporate to make sure that it was a reminder to me and my team to always strive to be better, to really do our absolute best in everything that we do. So that would be another thing I would say is just to, it's something that has to always be turned on to make sure you're always doing the best that you can. And I'm trying to think of, I could be here all day telling you, telling you tips, but I think that, and, you know, building a great team, that's obviously really key because you can't do it alone.
Sure. You mentioned a moment ago, as opposed to looking back, you're always looking forward. 20 years is reason to pause and reflect and think on this journey. And I know people tend to go in, you know, 5-year strategic plans. But like when you look forward, what do you see now?
Well, I see growth. To be honest, I've taken on 2 active investors into the business just this fall. I'm staying on. All of that is staying the same. I'm just going to be moving into more of a creative and kind of strategy and growth role, which is really exciting for me. I think I've realized I've taken the business as far as I can on my own in 20 years. So that's very exciting. So right now we're into training and that sort of thing, but that is something that we'll see in time. I'm not sure exactly where it's going to go, but I know it's going to be awesome.
One of those investors is going to need a lot of training, Dana. I'm just going to point that out. I say that because I love. I may have had a little birdie tell me about those investors. They're terrific.
Fabulous people, and they were customers, and they love food, and they're well versed in business, and it's just been a real joy, and it's been so exciting for this to happen. The staff love them, and they're great.
Awesome. I love to hear it. Congratulations. Like, it really is. I hope you take a moment to really feel what you've built over 20 years. It is a well-known, highly regarded institution in town, and you deserve all the credit for lifting that up and getting it to this point. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm not just saying that because you brought cookies either. I promise. Celebrate starting next Thursday and then right through the weekend with Dana Short Gourmet, 20 years in business, and I know there are at least 20 more years to come. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you, Mike.
Dana Short in studio with us on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Let's quickly get to the phones before your 11 a.m. news update in the 570 News Center. Francis is with us. Hey, Francis, good morning.
Yes, and how are you guys doing this morning?
Just great, thank you.
I have to say congrats to Dana. I go way back at the Bread-Up Center. I used to keep the elevator available to get her up and down with all her food and stuff. And I'll tell you, she sure could put on some good meals there.
She sure could. And you're such a gentleman, Francis, making sure the elevator was waiting so Dana could use it. Good man.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there was always treats after.
I believe it. I believe it.
Yeah. So, like I say, and we really enjoy her food still today,
I'm glad to hear that, and many of us have been for 20 years, and the next 20-year chapter is about to begin. Celebrating 20 years of Dana Short Gourmet, female-grown business, right here, our very own entrepreneur in the region. Next Thursday, all day at the store on Herb Street, it will continue through the weekend as well. 20 years of Dana Short Gourmet. Pretty cool success story from one of our own local entrepreneurs. All right, let's get you to the 570 News Center for an update. And then truckers want safer highways. Yes, the truckers themselves. How can we achieve that? We'll talk about it coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. It is an issue that we have discussed on the show before, and one that I believe it's very important we come back to. Road safety, and particularly that safety around the biggest vehicles using our roads, those being the transport trucks. Travis McDougall is the co-founder of Truckers for Safer Highways, and he makes his home right here in the region of Waterloo in the beautiful township of North Dumfries. And Travis makes time for our show this morning. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad today.
I'm glad to hear that. I want to start with a pretty close call that you had, and I acknowledge it's not like it was in Southern Ontario or along the 401, but it's an example of what you and others in your industry face on a pretty regular basis. What happened when you were up in the northwestern part of this province?
Right. So I was heading broad daylight, and I was heading eastbound towards Thunder Bay from the Winnipeg direction. And I crested a small hill and was encountered with two trucks coming towards me. One was in their own lane, one was in the oncoming lane. Neither one of them chose to back out when seeing me, back out of, you know, their speed so that they could get back in their own lane and we could pass each other safely. So I ended up passing both these trucks. I was ended up meeting them on the shoulder and somewhat of the gravel ditch of Highway 17. And it was pretty close. Our mirrors just about touched. So if it wasn't for going towards the ditch and possibly, you know, if the ditch was less forgiving than it was, then I could have rolled the truck if you know, the gravel went out from underneath me as I drove over it.
What is your heart rate doing in a moment like that, Travis? I can only imagine.
Well, I have to tell you, I had to stop just up the road just to take a breath and kind of settle the nerves, because in the moment, you're doing everything you can to not hit anything or hit anybody and to keep the truck upright. And so in the moment, I think it's adrenaline and you get through it. But afterwards, it takes some time to get past it.
Without question. And of course, you're headed on that stretch of highway. You want to get back home here to the region of Waterloo and the village of Ayr safely. And that could have prevented you from doing so. What do you think is behind a decision like that on the part of those other truck operators that neither would back off and get into their own lane, for example?
Unfortunately, there's a huge lack of experience, and you know, experience, you know, obviously can only come from someone, you know, doing the job, right? You can't gain experience without doing it. But there's a lack of judgment. I think understanding that these vehicles, you can't just get out in like you could in a car and put your foot down and now you're past these vehicles. And when you're passing another large vehicle, it takes that much longer. But there seems to be this misunderstanding that you can get out and pass, and maybe the other guy will let you pass. And that's not the case. So, you know, these decisions need to be made with the first priority being safety, and unfortunately that's not happening. So, like, our organization's big thing right now is the training and licensing needs to be significantly investigated on how it's being handled with these new drivers. And on top of that, the enforcement needs to happen. You know, the Ministry of Transportation spends $30 million on a new scale, for example, outside Thunder Bay, except it opened near the beginning of this year, and I've only drove through it with it being open myself once. And I do this run from Southern Ontario west almost weekly.
You talk about licensing and training, Travis, and I know it wasn't too long ago, within the last year or so, there was an investigation conducted into commercial truck driver training and licensing, and it found that there are some pretty serious gaps in place right now.
Right. I think you're referring to the Market Place report, which was just actually published or aired on television on, I think it was October 11th. And, they discovered that there is actually bribery. There's fraud happening within drive test. There's driving schools that will flat out tell a prospective student that you actually don't necessarily need the 103.5 hours required by MELT. You may need only 60 or 90, which is not even true by law. That's completely illegal. They are required to give you 103.5 hours of training. That's not an option. And we still believe that 103.5 hours is not nearly enough. You know, there's lots of professions out there that people's lives aren't at stake, and you need significantly more training to be a certified, you know, whatever trade it is. But our job, people's lives are at stake, and you're only required 103.5 hours of training. And so that your listeners know, that's not 103.5 hours behind the wheel driving. That's only about 30 to 40 hours behind the wheel on the road. The rest might be backing up in the yard or hooking up to a trailer or doing your pre-trip inspection or theory in a classroom. So there is a lot of stuff that is actually, there's a lot of misconceptions about the training and licensing.
So what can we do, Travis, to enhance both driver training and licensing?
Well, there certainly needs to be a major change to the training. The MTO needs to seriously look at how training is happening, and the Ministry of Colleges and Universities needs to do a lot more investigating and audits on these schools to make sure that they're doing what they're actually, what they say they're doing and what they're told they should be training. And then licensing, we think there needs to be a complete, maybe third-party investigation, or the MTO needs to investigate what is going on at Drive Test. What is Drive Test as a third-party provider? What are they doing to provide our road tests to every new driver? Because as CBC showed, we're not getting what the province and taxpayers are paying for.
Travis, I really appreciate you raising this issue and advocating the way that you have. Please stay safe, and thanks for joining the show.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Travis McDougall is the co-founder of Truckers for Safer Highways. He's based right here in the region of Waterloo in the village of Ayr. And he says enhanced driver training and licensing requirements along with increased enforcement are the first steps towards increasing safety on our roads. And, you know, as I reflect on that Marketplace report that Travis just mentioned, which is only a couple weeks old now, I'm thinking back on another investigation I remember watching on the news. It was one of the news magazine programs, and it was around just the obtaining of your driver's license here in Ontario and the driver schools that were really not doing a whole lot and passing people through anyway. I am fully with Travis. Look, he's got a vested interest given the amount of time he spends on the road and the kind of vehicle that he's driving. Totally get that. I think in general, these gaps need to be closed, and they need to be closed but quick, because the roads are busier than ever. And I feel as though the experience and or skill is less than ever. I mean, maybe that's just me. I don't know. Maybe you see it or feel it differently, but Would always love to hear from you about what you're seeing out there on the roads and what we might be able to do to make them safer. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
There certainly needs to be a major change to the training. The MTO needs to seriously look at how training is happening, and the Ministry of Colleges and Universities needs to do a lot more investigating and audits on these schools to make sure that they're doing what they say they're doing and what they're told they should be training. And then licensing, we think there needs to be a complete, maybe third-party investigation, or the MTO needs to investigate what is going on at drive test.
I have so many thoughts on this. Travis McDougall is the co-founder of Truckers for Safer Highways. He's based in Ayr, right here in the region of Waterloo. And he joins us to talk about his concerns and the near miss, or should I call it the near hit he had on Highway 17 up near Thunder Bay just about a week ago. But I'm going to take this even further than just the trucking industry, although I know many of our listeners are behind the wheels of big rigs, and you might just be passing through along the 401 corridor, or you regularly drive and you're not driving right now and you want to share thoughts with what it is you're seeing out there on the roads. I'm all ears at 519-570-2545, star 570, and 1-800-570-5715. I take these same ideas, though, that Travis talks about, from driver training through our drive test facilities, et cetera, to putting people onto the roads, licensing them to be on our roads today. And I think this applies across the board. My beloved and I were just talking about this when we were out for a walk the other night, and it could just be, you know, anecdotal based on our own experiences, but I don't feel as though that's the case. I feel as though it's legitimate when we say the roads have become more dangerous than they ever were before. There are just too many people who seem to not understand how to navigate the roads because they've changed so much, how to, you know, properly make a turn into the proper lane. Like, how many wide right turns do you see? Right? I passed somebody on the expressway yesterday, and you know me, I'm a stickler. I'll put my cruise control on. And they were doing about 80, 81 based on my cruise control on the expressway. It's just something, there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect out there generally. And I can't help but be concerned about the level of training that many people are getting before they are just handed that piece of paper and sent out there onto the roads to fend for themselves and put many of us, the rest of us, at risk. There's something missing there. And I think stricter enforcement on the schools that are doing the training and more rigorous testing before we put people on the road. I'm always reluctant to do the, well, back in my day kinds of stories. But I'll tell you what, I remember the hours and hours spent in classrooms with Young Drivers of Canada, and then the hours and hours of being in the vehicle, learning how to drive with Young Drivers of Canada. And you remember when they would take you over into the kind of Westmount Westmountish neighborhood, Union and Dunbar, in all, and you got all these goofy streets, the way they hooked up to each other, and the different stop signs, and it was very confusing. You had to be on your toes, and that's where they would take you, so you would be on your toes when you learned these things, when you applied your skills on the road. Anyway, let's go to the phones and hear from you. Paul, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm driving tractor right now.
Okay.
And you were just wondering what's the biggest problem.
Yes.
And you know what? You know, I shouldn't be saying this, but I'm going to say it.
Uh-oh, be careful.
It's not the cars. It's not the cars. It's the truck drivers. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I see it every single day. And everybody else sees it too. When the trucks are too close to each other, you can't even put a motorcycle to see it. You see it every single day. And, you know, it just kills me. I mean, that truck cannot stop. But we should know better, but we don't. You know, that's the biggest problem. I mean, you know, I get the cars cutting me off all the time. But we should know better as truck drivers to leave a distance between each other.
Uh-huh.
That's what I see.
All right, Paul. You know what? I hear you. I've seen that too. And you're absolutely right. We should know better. And I oftentimes blame the vehicles. Like, oh, look, there's space in between those two transport trucks. Well, there's a reason that space is there, because those drivers are doing the right thing. Sean, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I agree with the last caller entirely. I think the problem, it's not just with, you know, tractor trailers and stuff. It's with cars too. There's a lot more cars on the road. There's a lot more trucks. People either they're not, you know, aware of the rules of the road, or they don't care. I think it's a growing problem. But I just wanted to inject one thing to the conversation, and that is, I actually know a driver examiner, and there is an unwritten quota of sorts that exists, where the driver examiner has to pass a certain amount of people. And if they don't pass, if they don't meet that threshold, if it falls below that threshold, the driver examiner actually gets in trouble. They get hauled in, and they have to do retraining, which they don't want to do. So I think in a lot of cases, what's happening, or at least in some cases, what we're seeing is bad drivers getting passed when they shouldn't, just because this unwritten quota exists. And I think it's something that needs to be investigated further.
Sean, I appreciate that call. I'm with you. I worry about that end of this story as well. And yes, there needs to be, I think, some more rigorous enforcement to go along with the more rigorous training before we put people behind the wheels of machines that can do a lot of damage. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. I love this email from Jim that comes into Mike at 570news.com, echoing the comments made earlier by Paul when he said, these vehicles, particularly the large ones, are following one another too closely. Jim's email reads, love the topic. Remember, one car length back for every 10 kilometers per hour, chain reaction collisions are beyond common. Enforcement of that safe distance rule. Number two, lane discipline, says Jim in his email. Not passing, move over immediately. Again, enforcement. How many times do we have to say keep right except to pass? Number three, black windows, not allowing eye contact. Does that driver see me? Enforcement, says Jim. There's a law covering all of the above. Staying the proper distance back, lane discipline, and heavily tinted windows. Well done by you, Jim. You see what I see out there on the roads. And Caress's email to Mike at 570news.com. Really does seem to me that people don't know how to drive these days. When I was 19, back in 1989, I went to Young Drivers of Canada, 15 in-class sessions and 15 in-car sessions. Took about 6 months to get my license, and I took my exam in a snowstorm. It sounds very similar to my experience, Caress. I just took it a few years before you did, but I don't know. It's different out there. And I'm glad that Travis McDougall with Truckers for Safer Highways is helping to raise these issues provincially. All right, we're going to get you to the 570 News Center for an update. And then a filmmaker here in the region is looking for your spookiest stories. But he doesn't really believe those stories, does he? He just wants to make an interesting film. We'll find out coming up. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. It is the 29th of October, 2 days away from Halloween. So what better time to talk about things that you cannot quite explain? Have you ever experienced, had an encounter with the paranormal? If you have, Dan McLeod would like to have a conversation with you. Dan is a filmmaker based in Waterloo and joins the show this morning. Hey, Dan, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Not bad. It's kind of rainy out, but can't complain otherwise.
Great point. I mean, I haven't even had a chance to gripe about it yet, but have you seen a day in late October this dull? And like, it's almost a thunderstorm out there today.
I know. You know what? It is seasonally appropriate, though. I'll give it that. It's going to happen late October is the time for it to go.
Well done. Well done. And I would agree on that score. I love what you're attempting to do with this documentary, collecting these stories of these slightly difficult to explain, perhaps even full-on paranormal experiences that happen right here in the region. But I wonder, Dan, what your inspiration was for this.
My inspiration, about 5 years ago, I was living by myself and I was having difficulty sleeping because of, stereotypically as it is, noises coming out of the closet. And I didn't tell anybody about this for a long time until one day I saw what looked like a cloudy-shaped person walk into the bedroom. And I wasn't scared. I was just kind of confused. And then I thought about it and was like, I think that's what people would call a ghost. But again, I didn't tell anybody because I don't believe in ghosts. I don't know what else to call it, but that's what I saw. And then I casually was talking about like spooky movies with my coworkers. And my senior designer brought up the fact that she lives in a haunted house. And like, oh, no kidding. And then I talked to other coworkers and they were also telling me ghost stories. And I started like, how common is this that all these people I know have ghost stories? They just don't talk about them. So I just kind of brought that question out there. It's like, how many people around here have like spooky unexplained stories and who wants to talk about them? And that's kind of it.
I'm still trying to get over the cloudy figure that you see walk through your room. Like, I don't know. I might have been moving out the next day, Dan.
Yeah, I had never slept in that bedroom again, and I did eventually move out of that place. Again, it was like, I can rationalize it, like, oh, I was just seeing things, this or that. Fine, but I was still spooked, and so I still wasn't going in there. It didn't really matter what I could tell myself or not.
So how many such stories have you found in these here parts?
I've interviewed about 30 people so far in the last couple of months. And I'm going to keep going. So there's a lot of content and a lot of variety. I've got everything from like similar haunted bedroom stories to Sasquatch in the woods to UFO abductions, like the full gamut of bizarre encounters.
Now, how do you, if at all, verify the content and or the story that is being told to you?
In terms of gathering facts, it's impossible.
Sure.
You kind of got to believe people at their word or not. You can generally tell, just like a normal conversation, if someone's pulling your leg. At the moment, though, that hasn't happened. I've found, if anything, more people have spoken to me off the record because people don't want to be labeled as kind of kooky or seeing things or anything like that. So just convincing people to actually sit down and share their stories has been almost the harder sell to be public about it.
Would you ever have thought that this region could be such a treasure trove for eerie stories like this?
I mean, you can look at like a bit of the history with older buildings in any small town or big town, like especially when we go back to like the days of like Seagram's and all the Al Capone history and all that. So you can see, oh, maybe there's some spooky stuff there. But it's nothing I really grew up with thinking. You always think spooky things are something that happens somewhere else in famous buildings you hear of, like growing up. But in your own hometown, not really, no.
So what do you intend on doing with the stories that you're collecting?
These will be part of a documentary series. Eventually, they'll be on things like Tubi and Amazon. My own previous work, it's all been like narrative fiction, and that's where these things tend to go. But in terms of until that's ready, every week I'm releasing a clip of an interview on YouTube just so people can kind of get a sense of the stories that are coming forward.
Where can we find it?
If you go on YouTube and you search for Shapes of Night, we're the only channel called that, so you'll see it there. We've got about 6 up right now, and yeah, new interview every week. So far we've got a Sasquatch one, we've got a UFO one, and a few ghost stories.
Okay, so it is the perfect season for ghost stories, Dan. Is there one that you can share with us, even the highlights of it, to give us an idea of the sorts of stories you're hearing?
Sure. Well, actually, last night I was in the Arlington Hotel in Paris, Ontario, for a seminar on hunting ghosts. There were about 20 people out there with some professional paranormal investigators, and they had the entire fourth floor rented out. And I could only stay for a few hours. But the reason that this was happening at the Arlington is because last year they did an investigation and there was a case of what can only be described as demonic possession. Now, I didn't see anything demonic possession-wise, but the investigators were insistent on it, and they had a lot of witnesses, so that was pretty cool.
Does any of the, like, I'm sorry, when you said demonic possession, I got a little bit of a shiver. I mean, does any of this freak you out at all? Or are you looking at this strictly through the lens, no pun intended, but of, you know, creating the documentary?
It's a lot easier to be brave when you have a camera in front of your face. Looking through that lens, I find life is just a lot easier in general. If I was alone in the hotel without that, I think I'd be a lot more spooked. But when I'm there to work, for some reason, it's not as scary. Like, I went to a fear farm on the weekend, and that was a lot scarier, even though I know it was just pretend.
Has any of this changed your mind, or perhaps your initial experience that you shared with us changed your mind as to the existence of spirits among us, or maybe even, you know, intelligent life out there somewhere?
The intelligent life one, I've always been a lot more interested in terms of credibility because it is something much more measurable. It's tough for paranormal things. I believe I saw something, but even experiencing what I experienced, I'm still on the skeptic side. But to me, that's not really what's important. What is important is that the people who have experienced these things do believe it. And something, I believe they saw something. And it is worth noting just because this is such a common occurrence. So the more people I talk to, the more my mind opens a little bit. So in a way, this is sort of exploratory for my own views on life.
So an open-minded skeptic, then, you've become.
I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
I like that. You're soliciting stories, as I understand it, Dan. If somebody's got a ghost story or some sort of encounter with the unexplained, can they get in touch with you?
They can. If you find us on YouTube and you leave a comment, we'll get back to you. So if you just search for Shapes of Night, you'll find us on YouTube.
What other kinds of work had you been doing filmmaking-wise prior to embarking on this project?
Feature film and short film are the main stuff I've done. So either producing or directing, it's mostly horror stuff or sometimes comedy. I like working with big budgets, small budgets. Some of my favorite things to do are to make stuff by myself in my own home. So that kind of came out of the pandemic where I was just kind of bored out of my mind and I didn't know what to do, but I did have a camera so I could like star in my own spooky little shorts. So I guess the spooky horror element has always been there even before this documentary thing came along.
From bored out of your mind to scared out of your mind. What a life, Dan. What a life.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Really interesting stuff. I'm happy to hear of someone else who has had their mind opened. I don't think I've had ever an experience quite like yours, but over the years, I mean, the more I think about it, the more I allow room for, surely to goodness, you know, those spirits, those shapes, those figures, and yes, that intelligent life somewhere out there. It's got to be there.
I would hope so. If we're the only ones, then that's kind of a sad state for the universe.
Couldn't agree more. I'm not sold yet on Bigfoot, but I will watch at Shapes of Night and see what I can learn about this. Dan, thanks very much for making time for the show today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
You as well. Dan McLeod is a filmmaker based in Waterloo. Check out the YouTube channel Shapes of Night. This is the perfect time of year to do so. Find some spooky stories from right here in our own backyard. And if you leave a comment and you've got a story, Dan will get in touch and you can be perhaps part of this documentary that he's working on now. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Well, this is going to be a fun one for me because I've long been an admirer of the work of this next guest who joins me in studio. And just to prove to you once again that this show is like Forrest Gump's box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. We go from horror movies and the paranormal to stand-up comedy. That's right. That's how we do it here on the show. Alex McFarlane is the founder and producer with Rusty Nail Comedy. So good to finally meet you in the flesh, sir.
Ditto. Ditto. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. Yeah, we've been a huge fan of yours for years, so it's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, this is a mutual admiration society then, too, because I've always been, every time, and this is the God's honest truth, Alex, every time I see a stand-up show, I wonder why I don't go to more stand-up shows. I just enjoy it so much. And for somebody like you who builds a business like this, what's it like getting Rusty Nail Comedy off the ground?
It's been a dream. Yeah. It really has. It's been, I wake up smiling a lot. It's been years, but recently, about 14 months, I quit to do this full time. I quit my job to do this full time. I almost said quit my real job. This is a real job.
Fair.
But it's been a dream, and that's part of it. Seeing people laugh is just, I love it. And just people enjoying themselves, and I'm a huge fan of comedy, obviously, so being any part of it has been great. And the region of Waterloo has been amazing. The fans that we have here have been absolutely amazing. We have regulars that come to almost every show. One gentleman drives from Mount Forest every single Friday. He's missed 5 shows in 3 years.
Incredible.
Yeah. So it's just, when you find something you love to do and just passionate about it and... Yeah, it's been amazing.
Where did the comedy bug bite for you?
I think it's always kind of been there. My parents are very funny. I grew up with a lot of humor. It really took off for me. So when I lived in Toronto, I was in the restaurant business. A lot of actors, comedians, musicians were servers, bartenders to make ends meet. And I met a comedian there, and we started talking. I started writing a few jokes for him, little things. I mean, again, an amateur comedian, kind of an open mic guy that was trying to, young guy that was trying to make his way. And I mean, he did his own things. I just, you know, had a couple things on my own, but I was always afraid to actually jump on stage to do it. Moved back to Kitchener. A friend of mine loved doing DJ, like music, and he went in a competition. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot, too. So about a month later, I entered a stand-up competition at the London Yuck Yucks and kind of went from there.
Come on. So after all that time, you finally got on stage, and here we are.
Yeah. And then, once I got on stage, I realized I love the attention. Okay. No, I do want to keep doing this. And it just took off from there. And then I think around 2017-18, there was this... You know, driving to being in Canada as an entertainer is really tough, right? The biggest cities are not just hours away, days away. It's, you know, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal. So when I moved back to Kitchener, you know, going to Hamilton and Toronto and Windsor and all these other places, it got a little daunting. I had a life here as well, and there was not a lot going on in Kitchener, so I just started doing some of my own shows. First, it was kind of a selfish thing, so I could put myself on the show. And then I just met so many great people as a stand-up comedian that, they were encouraged to come here. And this is God honest truth. Comedians love performing in Kitchener-Waterloo. We have the best comedy fans. They're very appreciative. They laugh out loud. Not a lot of heckling.
We're polite around here for the most part.
For the most part, yes.
All right, speaking of those comedians who love to perform here, let's talk about what's happening next Wednesday night, because this is one of the other things I love about you and the work that you do, Alex. There is a sense of community attached to it. And next Wednesday night is going to be Stand Up for Parents for Community Living, which is a stand-up comedy show as a fundraiser for PCL, or Parents for Community Living. What's happening next Wednesday?
So next Wednesday, we're at Maxwell's Concert Hall, I believe it's called. Yeah, Maxwell's on University. If you know anything about PCL, you know they do amazing work in this community. I'm going to get emotional here. That's weird. People that know me that are hearing this know that I'm a big baby. but they just do amazing work. And one of Rusty Nail's thing is to be part of this community, to have real partners, to give back. I'm very appreciative and a lot of gratitude to the life that I have because of the fans that come to our shows. So this show, this is our second year, which is amazing. Last year was just absolutely amazing. And we're bringing two of the best comedians in Canada. Rusty Nail fans will be like, you say that every weekend. But it's true. And one of them is from here. Rob Bebenek is a Kitchener guy. He went to Grand River. He exploded a couple of years ago. His Winnipeg Comedy Fest video went viral. I think it's around 20 million views right now, which is a majority of the country. So,
amazing.
And then the other headliner is Martha Chavez, who has been a 30-year veteran in comedy, CBC debaters, CTV, she had her own show, Comedy Now special. So two of the best of the best. You'll be laughing your butt off, and it's for an amazing, amazing cause and organization. They just do amazing work over there. Yeah.
You know, I love it. And I'm not trying to take away from any of the other events that happen, golf tournaments, gala dinners, et cetera. Like, it's all great, but I think Parents for Community Living has done a great job here of standing out, if you'll pardon the pun with stand up, from the crowd, to have just a different kind of fundraiser, a chance for us to laugh and raise some money.
Yeah, I think sometimes comedy, when people think about entertainment or doing an event like this, sometimes comedy doesn't come to the forefront of their mind. I'm not sure why that is. A lot of times it's music, which is great too, don't get me wrong. But we really try, A, bring the best of the best, and to make sure that the event goes seamlessly, obviously. And just really, people come, have a great time, and leave laughing. Our goal is the next 3-4 days, the next week, they're talking about jokes. Oh, remember when you said this and said that? And they're laughing again. And it's just that a reoccurring thing. One of our sayings, it's from a comedian, John Paul, who's a great comedian, Canadian comedian. He says that comedy is going to save the world. It's one thing that we can all... We all do. We all laugh, and yeah, we're really excited about next Wednesday and helping out this great organization and being part of it.
I think I'm not even joking, said that to a buddy of mine the other week. Comedy's going to save the world, or something along those lines, because I agree. It's something that's universal, and we definitely need more of it in our lives. Where can we get tickets to be a part of this next Wednesday?
You can go to Eventbrite. They're online right now. If there's any issues, there shouldn't be, but you can go to Eventbrite and just put in PCL stand-up or Rusty Nail Comedy into the search bar, and it will come up, yeah.
Excellent. And where can we learn more about Rusty Nail Comedy?
You can go to rustynailcomedy.com on the World Wide Web. We do Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday every single week in Kitchener-Waterloo. And again, we bring the best of the best. It's only $20, 90 minutes. It's really kind of the sweet spot for us where, you know, everybody can come. You know, even if you have a babysitter and you got to get home early, you know, 8 till 9:30. And we guarantee our laughs. If you can come to me at the end of the show and say that I didn't find that funny at all, I'll give you your money back. I promise you, I will.
That's never happened. I'm not surprised. Love what you're doing. Thanks for supporting Parents for Community Living, and thanks for being here this morning.
Absolute pleasure. We love what you do. We are huge fans of yours as well, so thank you. We love Waterloo Region, Kitchener-Waterloo, and the support has been amazing, and the PCL is just an amazing organization.
It all loves you back, Alex. It does. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Alex, you have a great day.
You as well. Alex McFarland, the founder of Rusty Nail Comedy. Next Wednesday night, stand up for PCL, Parents for Community Living. Get your tickets on Eventbrite. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Hey, do you remember that time the city of Cambridge tried to tell you that your tax increase was going to be 1.26% when in fact it's going to be 4.68%? Oh yeah, and the time that the city of Kitchener told the region of Waterloo to take their speed camera program and, well, shove it? Yeah, those things happened today. I suspect we'll have a few things to talk about in our next hour. Open lines coming up on the 12 o'clock talk back hour on the Mike Farwell Show. 570 News Radio, Rogers TV.
Take out the papers and the trash. Or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more. Yaggedy yak.
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room.
Back.
when the 12 o'clock talk back hour starts, I turn off all the lights and just allow the natural light through the studio window to keep me awake through the final hour of the show. With the TV cameras off for the day, I don't need all the overhead lights. But today, so dull and rainy is it that the lights will stay on in the studio. Just thought I'd share the ambiance with you as we dive in to our 12 o'clock talk back hour this afternoon. Open phone lines so you can call and let us know what's on your mind. Maybe there's something going on in your neighborhood, like your neighbor's Halloween decorations are being stolen again. I shared that story with you. I talked about it last week, the corner of East Avenue and Pandora. Neighbors in that area, because the owner of the home, who goes all out at Christmas time, posted on his neighborhood Facebook page that some of the items from his display had been stolen. You come through in a big way and take him some donated things to help him replenish. And wouldn't you know, the thieves were back at it. But being the smart guy that he is, he put a tracking device inside one of the most attractive gravestones. He tracked it to a house not a block away. And yet, police can't force their way in to retrieve his stolen items. He's talked to the homeowner. They say, we don't know what you're talking about. We have no idea where your gravestone might be. Wild times, wild times. And then, of course, there's the city of Cambridge. Honest to goodness. They put out a news release last night that says a tax increase for next year of 1.26%. Now, you know me. I'm a bit of a numbers nut. I hear 1.26%. I'm like, wow, like that's some impressive work. Every year you hear the same thing around budget time. We're going to sharpen our pencils. We're going to do whatever it takes. Everything's on the table. Getting down to 1.26% is significant. And then you realize that what the city said in its news release and what the city's own budget documents say are two entirely different things. It's actually a 4.68% increase, because there's a 1% infrastructure levy, which you're still paying. So you can't call it 1.26%. It's at least 2.26%. And then, of course, there is the additional stormwater rate that you have to pay. Even though the city is breaking it out differently this year, you're still paying it. So you can't say it's 1.26% when your very own budget documents say it's 4.68%. Very misleading and incredibly disappointing on the part of the city of Cambridge in this regard. And then there's the city of Kitchener, which has looked the regional government square in the eyes and said, you know that automated speed enforcement program you've got going, where you are going to run the cameras 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year in school zones when there is no school in session, et cetera, et cetera. You know that $21 million surplus that has been generated by these cameras so far? We're not buying into it, said the city of Kitchener. And so a motion from Kitchener Councillor Bill Ioannidis last night said the city of Kitchener is not going to allow any more speed cameras on roads in its city that are not regional roads. So if it's a municipally maintained road, there will not be a speed camera in the city of Kitchener. Dare I say, this is the first crack in the speed camera armor. Just a few things that you might have a thought or two about today. Let's go to the phones. John, you're first. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Oh, good. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
I've got a number of points. I'll be really brief. The first one is talking about, you know, the government giving money to corporate Canada, to big corporations.
Yes.
While I understand why they do it, I don't necessarily agree with it. I think what it is, like I saw this with the Harper government and Toyota, effectively the Harper government, in my opinion, bought and paid for Toyota to build here to create jobs to feed back into our economy. That was sort of my take on it.
Yeah, and I think that's the argument for it, for sure.
Yeah, it's an enticement. Do I agree with it? No, but we're capitalism being what it is, I'm not sure what else we can do.
Fair point.
Second point, And I'd love to hear what your other listeners think about this. I had heard a broadcast on the radio that said one in four Canadians, it's pathetic, one in four Canadians are living in poverty. I would love to see a member of the media ask Trudeau, what is his target? We're one in four. What's your target, Justin? Is it one in three? Is it one in two? Because it's sure heading the wrong way.
You think the Prime Minister is deliberately impoverishing people?
No, I don't think it's deliberate, but it's a number of their policies have sort of taken us to where we are right now.
Sure, I can understand that.
And I would love to hear what other listeners think about that.
All right, John.
Another point number three. I had also heard in a radio broadcast that we're at the point now where we're so far in debt federally in Canada that every cent of the GST that's collected goes to service the debt. And that scares me, because effectively we're working for nothing, and that's I have a real problem with that.
I have a huge problem with the massive debts that we're carrying, both provincially and federally. I agree with you on that.
Yes, and my final two items on my final point. I see with the government that we have and the opposition parties too, there's never a happy medium. My wife and I worked and had our kids in daycare. We paid the going rate. That's fine. I don't understand why it had to be $10 a day. Like, I mean, I think $25 a day is perhaps reasonable. $10 a day is just, it just seems extreme. And I don't know how sustainable it is, because we're starting to hear that daycares are struggling and they're not sure what they're going to do. So that's another point. My final point is with the talk about the old age security. I don't understand. Like, I get it that, you know, certain seniors are struggling. I understand that. What I don't understand is, why is the government's clawback set at $140,000? I don't know why it has to be that high. Like, I mean, if you're making $140,000 through other investments or retirement income, how much old age security do you really need?
Great questions, John.
And I'd love to hear what other listeners think. These are just things that kind of weigh on my mind.
All right. We'll find out, because I'm late for a break now. But hey, say a lot, say a little. You can be the co-host on the show. John had a lot on his mind. He shared it. You want to respond to any of that or share what's on your mind, however much or however little? This is your hour to do it. It's the 12 o'clock talk back hour on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. Let's get right back to the phones so we can hear more of your thoughts on the Talk Back Hour. Paul, you are next. Good afternoon.
I keep hearing these little clips about photo radar, and it's starting to sound like you're in opposition to photo radar. Is there any particular reason that you might not want to see 170-plus photo radar cameras in the region of Waterloo?
Yes.
Do you have an ulterior motive?
Yes. I want to keep my money in my pocket. And I actually, more than anything, because you know what? If you speed, you should be ticketed for it and you should pay the fine. But this is ridiculous with enforcing school zone speed limits around the clock every day of the year. It's not being treated fairly, and I want my government to treat me fairly. There.
And you don't want to eat your shoe.
And I don't want to eat my shoe.
You know, there's a lot of schools right around where I am, and one over towards downtown Preston, it's down to 30 kilometers an hour now. The I can't figure out, there's a couple of schools on Concession Road in the Preston, not the Concession Road over in Galt, who cares about them, but here in Preston on Concession Road, there's several schools along there. And
problem is, Paul, Concession Road, I'm almost positive, is a regional road, which means the region's going to trump the city.
You know, so if we need it on a side street,
We don't.
Just outside of the downtown core at 30 kilometers an hour. Why is the other one going to remain at 40 kilometers per hour? Not that I'm advocating that dropping it down. I'm pretty careful, in any areas that I know where there's a school zone, I keep an eye out for those signs because there's so many different ones that you got to really watch. You turn a corner and boom, there's a school and you're over the speed limit. But 24/7, these cameras will be in effect. And when we get 170-plus cameras, enjoy your... What are you going to have, a hush puppy?
No, okay, Paul. Okay, Paul and I made a little wager. And I said... Well, actually, I was running my mouth. Shocking, I know. But I said that if we have 175 speed cameras in this region by 2028, I'll eat my shoe. Now the city of Kitchener's pushing back. I still don't... I never believed that we would get that many that quickly. Paul's point on the 40 versus the 30, it's regional versus municipal. Like, it's just another headache with our two-tier system. But the big thing to remember here is the city of Kitchener brought forward a motion last night from Ward 7 Councillor Bill Ioannidis that said, we're pressing pause in the city. We're not going to put any speed cameras on streets that are maintained by the city, by the municipality, the lower tier of our two-tier municipal system, because we don't think it's fair to our residents. And the city of Kitchener is absolutely right about this. I hope the region also goes to the Senate chamber and has some sober second thought on this. Kyle, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I want to talk about the truck driving licensing.
Sure.
You know how many times I've been in a loading dock and I've had to get out of my truck because another truck driver doesn't know how to back into a loading dock? I mean, I could probably count on this year alone, I've got a handful of times I've been at a loading dock and I've had another driver come up to me and ask me, can you back in my truck because I don't know how to do it? And I go back to this before and I'll say it again. The commercial license for truck drivers, the AZ license, should be treated the same way that they do for pilots. You go and you have to do over 300 hours of driving alone, not including the in-class, but treat it like a pilot license where you do 300 hours of driving and you do 200 hours alone of in-class. I think that would be a lot better than what they have right now. And it was a lot easier for me to go in and write an AZ versus going in and getting my commercial pilot license. But I tell you, I watched the documentary on it, and I see it firsthand, and I shake my head because they rather govern a truck at 105 kilometers an hour versus change the way the school system for AZ truck driving is. So that's all I got to say there, Mike, but I just wanted to give you my two cents on that, man.
Thanks, Kyle. I appreciate that, especially from somebody in the industry. You're not going to get an argument from me on more rigorous testing and training. And I'll add to that because I brought us average Joes and Jane drivers into this too, not just truckers, but we're long past the time that we should add mandatory retraining. I say every 5 years minimum, we should be out there getting tested again to make sure we are still following the rules of the road and behaving appropriately out there. I firmly believe that. It's your 12 o'clock talkback hour on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. And if you want nonstop opinions, you just have to keep answering the phone. That's what I love about the Talkback Hour. Lang is with us. Good afternoon, Lang.
Yeah, good afternoon. You made a comment saying you'd like to see retesting of G-licensed people every 5 years.
Yes, sir.
All they're going to do is you're going to have people come and be on their best behavior for their one-day test and then go their merry way. Second point is, where's the infrastructure for this and the fact that they can't even test the new drivers in a timely fashion, yet you want to have every driver being tested every 5 years? It needs a lot more planning than that.
Well, my plan starts with, here's the goal. Now let's figure out how to get there. And the goal is to have enough people, because I agree, the infrastructure does not currently exist. We're way behind as it is. But I'm saying build that infrastructure because it's critically important. Our roads are so dangerous right now. We better get our heads around this. That's my take.
But Mike, a one-day test, you know yourself, if you know you have a one-day test, you're going to do everything correctly, perfectly the one day, and then just go in your merry way and your old habits will come to the forefront.
So you want to test every 5 months instead of every 5 years? I'm good with that, as long as we're getting the reminder of what we're supposed to be doing out there.
I think we could spend our tax dollars a lot better by not retesting everybody.
I don't think it'll cost us anything, because I think you should pay for the right to be on the road. The privilege of being on the road, you should pay for. So this would be revenue neutral.
Well, this is a government program that will not cost us money.
Okay, you got me on that one, Lang. You got me good on that one.
All right, just a thought.
I appreciate you. Thank you. And you're right. Like, I mean, what am I going to say to that? We're actually going to run a government program that doesn't end up costing us more than the stated cost up front? Absolutely true. But I truly have thought this through on the infrastructure piece and how it should be. In theory, it is a privilege to be on the roads. If you are operating the motor vehicle, you've paid for the vehicle, you've paid the insurance, you're paying for the gas, etc., you can pay for the retest. And that should fund all of the necessary drive test centers and driver examiners that we need along the way, because it's a privilege. And truly, if we don't get our heads around this soon, I even said this to my beloved just the other night. I said, I can't wait until I can get off the road. It's too dangerous out there for me now. Maybe I'm getting old, but I don't want that risk in my life anymore. Because y'all are nuts out there. You know that, right? I'm not, but you are. It's your 12 o'clock talk back hour on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. It is your hour to do just that, talk back. So I'll go right back to the phones. Asif, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you? Uh-oh. Asif, where are you?
I'm driving.
Oh, here you are. Sorry. No, we had a little technical issue. I'm glad I got you back.
No worries. Just wanted to get I'll call you back. 1 second.
Wait, what? Did he just say he's calling me back? So wait, we answered the call, and then Asif said, I'll call you back later? So you just tell me at least, like, ask how I'm doing first or something. Well, maybe he did. Anyway, I don't know what just happened with Asif's call, but let's go next to Mayor Jake. Your Worship, good afternoon.
Mike, how are you now?
I'm good, and you?
Good. How about those Rangers?
How about them, huh? 11 in a row without a
regulation.
Yeah, buddy, all good. 6 wins in a row, 11 games without a regulation loss, and... By the way, CHL Top 10 came out about half an hour ago. We're not in it. Who cares?
So you know what? That's okay, because a lot of people will doubt Rocky Balboa, and he still beat Apollo Creed. So,
oh, did he ever.
And there's always that little chance, eh?
There's always a chance. So you're telling me there's a chance, Mayor Jake?
There's always a chance. Are you kidding me? Every duck finds a pond. That's what I always say.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
I love it.
I wanted to talk about, you know, like I've been listening and listening to your great callers talk about driving behaviors, and I still stand by my what I would impeach and bring into having drivers, if you're caught on dash cam misbehaving, and I don't mean, you know, a little mistake, but doing things like passing in the right lane or not passing the right lane, passing in a right-hand turning lane or doing something that you shouldn't be doing. But what I'd like to see for the Ontario government is to start sending people back to driving school. Like an in-school suspension, but for driving school.
An in-school suspension, but for driving school. So if you get caught misbehaving on the road, you go to driver school.
That's right.
Fine by me.
And you got to pay for it. And that money gets generated back into the government.
I'm with you. Mary Jake, let's do it.
It gets put towards the hospitals. Yeah.
I second the motion, Your Worship. Yeah.
You want to misbehave on the road, you're going to pay for it, and you're going to have to relearn how to drive.
It's perfect. Go back to school. Nobody wants to go back to school.
That's right.
Okay.
So either behave or go back to school.
I love it. I love it, Mayor Jake.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thank you, Your Worship. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Asif, you're here again.
Sorry, I dropped because of I had a bad cough right there.
That's okay.
Well, this is something that I'm actually about to tell you, which is that, like, do you hear, like, a scary story coming for, like, I guess, Halloween-wise?
Do I have a schedule for Halloween?
Do you want to hear a scary story for Halloween?
Oh, yeah, I definitely want to hear a scary story.
So, this happened to me, actually. This was about, like, 10, 12 years ago. I was at home with, I was at that time, like, I think 15 or 16 years old. And I was just sleeping, and I was sleeping in the basement. One night I woke up, and, like, in the middle of the night, I just saw, like, a white man standing right in front of me. I shook my head, closed my eyes, and reopened, and he's gone. The weird thing is, like, everyone would think, oh, that's just a dream. The weird thing is, my mom saw it in her dream, leaving about, like, 3 days later.
No way. Come on.
And that freaked me out for so long.
It freaked me out just hearing the story, Asif.
So, yeah. I wanted to know that Halloween story, kind of.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. I'll give you a little heads up, since Asif is clearly ahead of the game. On Thursday morning, during the flip side, because Thursday is Halloween, we will solicit those same stories. So if you've got a creepy story, an encounter with the paranormal, we would love to hear it during the flip side this Thursday morning at 11:30. So it wasn't just that Asif saw this white figure in front of him. It was that his mom dreamed the same thing. Come on now. Grant, you are on the Talkback Hour. Good afternoon. Oh, dear. The sinister laugh of Grant.
You disappointed me at 10:30.
10:30, I disappointed you. How could I? I had Dana Short in studio talking about 20 years of Dana Short Gourmet.
Hocus Pocus, the Coach's Show.
The Coach's Show is on Fridays, you knucklehead.
No, but you did say...
No. The Coach's Show is on Friday. Nice try. I should know. It's my show. I tell you when the Coach's Show is. It's Friday.
I don't
say that. No, I do not say that. Every Friday at 10:30.
I don't know.
Grant, who do you think knows? The guy who made the show or the guy who listens to the show?
That listens to the show.
Stop it. Every Friday. Sorry, buddy.
That's not nice.
Well, I'll tell you what is nice. Here's what I'm going to tell you, okay? Tonight, 6:30, we're going to start the broadcast, me and Paul Fixter. You're going to hear a hocus pocus, you see a hocus, on the pregame show. And then, even though it's Tuesday, and I have to come back to work tomorrow morning really early, I'm going to stay at the odd late, and I'm going to take phone calls on Rangers Talk. That's going to happen today.
Well, that's part of your job, though.
Yes, it is. Part of my job is to work 24 hours a day for this radio station. That's part of my job.
And a funny comedian is Jeremy Hotz.
Okay.
He drags around his microphone on the stage, and he's actually funny looking. I got to meet him in person, and I told him, I said, "You're funny to look at."
Wow.
And he looked at the security guard. I think that's a compliment.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
Funny looking?
Not you.
Okay. Not me. Not me. I'll take it, Grant. I'll take it. No Coach's Show on midweek games. Coach's Show every Friday morning, 10:30. And pregame shows 30 minutes before every Rangers game right here on 570 News Radio. This is your 12 o'clock talkback hour. This is called the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. It is your 12 o'clock talkback hour, and you want to talk today. I'm here to listen. Andre, you're on the talkback hour. Good afternoon.
Good morning, good afternoon, Mike.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night.
No, I've been listening to you all day, of course.
Of course.
That's why I say that. No good night, because I'm going to listen to you again tonight.
Attaboy.
That's So a couple of things I wanted to talk about the show today, two of them. So let's rewind. One is about the person on East Ave with the Christmas Halloween thing. You know, just unfortunately, the system is, you know, even if you know it's there and the police goes there, they need a warrant, and a warrant costs a lot of money. You know what I mean? It's very unfortunate, but, you know, I don't believe in negative, two negative makes a right. But it is Devil's Night tomorrow, right? So, nice sign to tell people, you know, don't give the address for pitching forks. But, you know, that's just karma. That's karma.
Well, I'll tell you what, Andre, I got to read this Facebook post. I know the street that these stolen items are on, and I might just go there myself. Well, I'm going to be polite about it. I'm just going to say, hey, stop being a jackwagon.
You know, it's so, you know, people, the kind people are getting attacked, and it's just, especially nowadays, to everything we've been through, you know, through COVID, and now with immigration and refugees, and, you know, we're trying to get along all these, you know what I mean? It's just so tough out there. Why make it worse? Like, right? So that's one. Two, the bike thing. My stomach is a little bit sore from this weekend, you know, being sick. And this was a tough one because it reaches my heart when a person, like, okay, myself, I have two kids.
Okay, Andre, you know I love you, right? But I got other callers waiting, and when you say the bike thing, not everybody understands that you're talking about the story we did today about the woman who repairs bikes for charity and has been shut down because somebody complained.
Thank you.
Okay. So quickly, please.
We had a couple bikes, you know, every year and stuff like that, and we throw them on the street, and the metal guy comes, and, you know, they make money off of it. But, you know, when you you know, you get a seat or a wheel, or it's not worth it to replace it. So you get somebody who can, like that Lady Mary, who fixes it, you know, for a cheap cost. So she has the parts, and then she does something good with it. Like, please leave the good people alone.
I agree. Great, Andre. Well done. Great finish. You finished strong on that one, buddy. Greg, you're next on the Talkback Hour.
Hi there. Quick comment and quick question.
Okay.
First comment, I was treated to the Rangers game back on October 20th against Guelph.
Yes.
And, well, you obviously know the Rangers better than me, but what I was impressed with, it seemed like whatever line they put out there, there was a chance to score, there was good defense. It's like, is the key this season, like, instead of a Rakoff-led power line, just that any, like, is there really a lot of, like, what do you call it, depth? Or, like, all the lines seem like they all had potential, and you never really saw a difference such that anybody any given time. And I wonder, is that a fair statement? Is that the key, that the talent is kind of like equal from top to bottom this time?
I think there is good depth with this hockey club, but more than anything, Greg, I think they're all buying in to what the coach tells them they have to do. If you want to be successful, do these things. And they've been doing those things pretty well.
Okay, because I can say that whoever was on there, it's like, wow, they almost scored. Wow, they almost scored. It's like, this is good to see that, like, you know, not, you don't have a checking line or someone out there just to, you know, pound bodies and to let someone else do the scoring. But anyways, yeah, that was the comment. I just wanted to wait for your in agreement. And secondly, I'll try to be quick on this one. I've been doing delivery work for years, 20 years plus, different ones, and I never park in a handicapped spot, even if it's, you know, makes me have to walk farther with whatever I'm carrying. And it bugs me when I see somebody without the sign, the handicapped sign there. So I just tend to always look and see, okay, there's a sign, carry on. The other day I saw somebody come back out, there was a sign, okay, fine. But two completely mobile people came out of a restaurant, got into it, and drove away. It's like, okay, I'm sure whoever was eligible for that sign was not with them that day. Next Tuesday, is it when you talk to the police again?
That's right.
Can you ask them, like, does that disabled person, just because that sign's in the window, does that make that car allowed to park wherever they want? Or if they would see somebody come out, and could they actually stop them and say, okay, where's the person who's entitled to this? You don't have them, and you're abusing the whole thing, because that irks me. And I just wondered if they could really do something about it, if they actually saw that, and, you know, nobody's disabled here. Or is it just free game as soon as you got the sign? Because I have family that had, my late mother, my sister right now, they have those signs because they have needs. They have mobility issues. So just if you can put that on the docket for next Tuesday, because I tend to miss the show. I can't get there in time. And see what they think, please.
All right, Greg. I appreciate the call. You know what I find? It's so interesting. We get really upset when somebody else is taking advantage of something that we, because we follow the rules and we are more respectful, we do not take advantage of ourselves. I'm sure that it could be, at minimum, a warning from a police or bylaw officer. But the sign for disabled parking goes with the vehicle. So there's not really much that can be done. What we're really relying upon is an individual's good nature. And if they do not demonstrate that good nature, even though we do, we could have had that closer parking spot, right? But we're too good for that. And then somebody else decides they're not too good for that and they take that parking spot and we get all fired up about it. I can't imagine where it would be on the list of priorities for police, Greg. I understand your concern and why it would annoy you. Like, that's as much a pet peeve as anything else. But anyway, we'll see if it fits into the docket next week when Police Chief Mark Crowell and Staff Sergeant Scott Griffiths are here. They join us on the first Tuesday of every month between 11 and noon for Ask the Chief. Final break, back with more of your 12 o'clock talkback hour on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. Final minutes of the show for another day. At 1 o'clock, we'll turn things over to the 570 News Center. And then Now You Know with Rob Snow from 1 until 3. Right back to the phones on our talkback hour. Susan, good afternoon.
Hi, Michael.
Hello, Susan from Sarnia.
Yep. I'm disappointed in your attitude towards the municipal speed cameras. So follow my logic.
Okay.
You want to keep your money in your pocket.
Always.
At the expense of maybe someone getting hurt or maimed. And you are always telling us about the jack wagons on Iron Needle, how fast they go. And so if you are a law-abiding driver and don't speed, why would you think your money's going to fly out of your pocket?
Well, because I think it's possible that one day at Christmas or in July, I might drive 45 kilometers in a 30 kilometer per hour school zone, and that camera's going to be on at that time on Christmas Day or in July, and I'm going to get a ticket.
Yeah, sucks to be you.
Okay.
You know, Susan,
what? No, you're right. And I said that, like, you're right. If you speed, you should be fined for it. But I don't think that's fair treatment. I really don't.
18% of all road fatalities involve pedestrians, and that includes children. And you can Google that. I mean, and it's gone up.
But as was pointed out at Kitchener Council last night, those collisions are not happening in front of schools. Young children walking to school or home from school are not being maimed by vehicles.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay, good.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Good. So why do we need those cameras there? Let's focus on the areas where the pedestrians are being.
For the jack wagons.
All right, Susan. Okay, I'm a jack wagon. I get it.
Okay, go Sarnia Sting.
Settle down. Settle down with that kind of happy crappy at the end of my show today. Oh, wow. Susan, I get that you're upset with me today, but do you have to use such vulgar language? I'm just hoping for a good game. And again, I think Susan's got me dead to rights on that one, doesn't she? If you don't want to get a ticket, don't speed. However, when it comes to these cameras, here's my but. I know I'm making an excuse here, but we will push back against those rules that we do not feel as though are being fairly applied. And I'm sorry, but it's not fair to apply these rules 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year in the name of safety when there is nothing on that particular road to keep safe. And you look at the data that was shared by Kitchener Council last night, and the collisions that we're trying to prevent are not even happening in these areas. So why are you putting the speed cameras in those areas? So you can take money from us. It's a cash grab. An update from the 570 News Center. Now You Know with Rob Snow. I'll be back at the hockey game tonight with Paul Fixter. Pre-game coverage brought to you by Harris Law. We'll start at 6:30. Colin Robertson is our guy on the other side of the glass. My name is Mike Farwell. Bye for now.